Off the Ball, GAA.
Reportedly that Brian Fenton has retired. The thing is, he's just 31. While he may be just 31, it's a decade, an unbelievable decade with the Dubs.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock. Keith Tracy is here with us in studio. We're going to be chatting to Ciara Grant at full time in Ireland against Wales, and we'll get over to Cathy McNamee very shortly as well. All eyes on the Aviva Stadium, where there's 80 minutes gone. It's Ireland 0, Wales 2, Wales leading 3-1 on aggregate. Keith Tracy, you're very welcome to studio. This is not looking good from an Irish perspective.
No, the first half was very, very nip and tuck, not an awful lot between the two teams. But as soon as Wales converted the penalty kick, Ireland really haven't looked like they've had an answer. It's got really, really scrappy. And then the second goal was a decent goal from a Welsh point of view, with the left wing back Woodham coming inside. It's a decent ball. Maybe Hayes can do a little bit better. The Irish centre half maybe can stop it at the ball getting in behind. But once Jones gets in behind, it's a lovely accurate finish. He doesn't try and do too much, but it just places it into the corner. And look, you're sitting here and you're thinking, Ireland, you feel like Ireland have another gear, like they can go up to the gears and make something happen. But you know, what we now 70-80 minutes in, and we haven't really had a shot on target. I don't remember the Welsh goalkeeper really being, you know, having to make saves. Although we're running around, we're applying pressure, it's not really equating into any sort of chances. It's turned into a bit of a scrappy game, which at this moment in time will really, really suit the Welsh. But I think Fishlock has had a really good game. Woodham at left wing back for the Welsh has been good, and I've been really impressed with Rachel Rowe, 32 years of age, but really, really sharp, covers the ground really quickly.
I think there was basis for optimism, given Ireland had, you know, 50% of the opportunities. It felt half of the good stuff that happened in the game was due to Ireland, half the good stuff that happened in the game last week was due to Wales. So you add in home advantage in the second leg, maybe Ireland's extra experience from being in a tournament, and you might have given Ireland the edge tonight. But really, in this second half, they have been totally outclassed.
Yeah, well, it's been very, very, you know, tight margins, and it's an old cliche, but there isn't an awful lot between the two teams. And I did think, I left my house at half time. I came across and I just thought that this is going to be on a knife edge. The first goal is going to be absolutely huge, and when the Welsh got the penalty, I'm thinking, right, it's over to Ireland now to try and you know, get something back. And they did, they pushed on, and like I say, once the Welsh won the ball and Woodham placed that pass, it's 3v3 up in our final tour. So it was very, we were rolling the dice a little bit. Brosnan has had to make a couple of saves, and if you're being ultra harsh, we haven't really seen an awful lot of Katie McCabe in the second half as an attacking outlet. She looks really, really up for the game, looked a little bit wound up at times, but in terms of getting on the ball and making things happen, doing things that we know she can do from an Irish point of view, it hasn't really happened. But as I say, I think we have to credit Wales with an awful lot of that.
What can happen in a game where somebody like Katie McCabe is a bit peripheral? Because it's happened on two occasions, and look, I know there's some of this that is due to positioning. It is her best position, but it is obviously a situation where Ireland's pound for pound best player is out on the left, and if you're an opposition in possession, you can try and keep the ball away from that flank, for example. I mean, there's going to be a lot of being wise after the fact on Eileen Gleeson now if this result holds up. But Katie McCabe has not really had her fingerprints all over this tie in the way many people would have liked.
No, she hasn't. And it's always a talking point, isn't it? If ever Katie has... It's very, very rare that she has an undercooked day for Ireland. But if ever she is a little bit off colour for Ireland, the first thing that people go to is, should we be playing her at left back? Should she be playing a little bit more advanced? I totally understand that. But I do think from left back, she can still dictate the game. And we all know modern left backs, modern right backs aren't on paper, you know, out at left back, out at right back. Katie will often pop into midfield. Now she's like a left wing forward. She's playing in the centre as well. But what the Welsh have done really well, they've been really well drilled within the units, especially in the midfield and defence. They forced Ireland out wide, and look, the pitch does look a little bit cut up because of the rugby games. I don't know whether that has tied into Ireland not really getting the ball down and playing too much football. But Ciara Caruso, some of the service up the horse has been you know, a lot of fighting balls up to her now, you know, real quality service in there. And again, you know, the Welsh came out after the first game and said there's an awful lot more for us to show. We think there's an awful lot more for Ireland to show as well. Well, yeah. I think Wales have just shown a little bit more than Ireland have.
Let's get over to Kathleen for another update, because Eileen Gleeson has made another double substitution. Kathleen?
Yeah, another double substitution with Heather Payne and Kira Caruso going off for Izzy Atkinson and Abby Larkin. Ireland just have a corner at the moment that Leanne Kiernan won out on the left side. So it'll be interesting to see how this one goes. Referee is taking a bit of time. Wales have slowed this game down incredibly since they scored those two goals. I thought it was slow in the first half, but geez, they've really gone for it now. And swung into the box. Clark goes for it, misses, but it goes out and it goes for a corner on the other side. So still some opportunities from Ireland here, but Wales definitely looking like the more confident ones on the ball. Katie McCabe is stepping up to take this one from the other side. Should have said it was Megan Connolly as well that took the one from the other side now that she is on the pitch.
It's pretty much felt like a continuation of the themes early in the second half, Kathleen, as in the substitutions, which now number five. It hasn't exactly sparked Ireland into any new sense of dominance.
Oh, it's saved off at Nifa! Oh, that's a goal!
Goal for Ireland.
Got one back. Anna Patton, who gave away the penalty at the start of the second half.
Wow.
Has scored a header for Ireland, and they are back in this with 5 minutes of normal time left. Wales are slowly walking up to the halfway line. That was brilliant. The corner was whipped in by Katie McCabe. Initially cleared off the line by the Welsh defender, and then Patton was there to tap it in.
It's Patton twice.
Yet, Owen. It's not over yet.
Not over yet. It is Patton twice. She gets up. It's a brilliant delivery from Katie McCabe's left boot. She's getting very, very annoyed beforehand with the official, just let me take this corner quick, which she eventually gets. But Patton gets up highest. It's headed off the line, and then Patton heads her own header off the line again into the back of the net. And what a moment this could be for Ireland. As I was saying beforehand, like, it didn't really look like the triple substitution had done anything to curb the Welsh dominance in the second half. But there's been two further substitutions, five changes now in the second half. Let's take a quick break and let's be back for the closing stages at the Aviva Stadium.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every Premier League game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
A miraculous recovery from the Welsh goalkeeper, Kathleen, who looked like she had suffered a severe injury. What's going on?
Yeah, there is a lot of time wasting going on from the Welsh here. 8 minutes at a time have been announced. We're about 40 seconds into those so far. We've just seen our first Megan Campbell free throw, and she just has another one in now. She is backing up. She's just about, I'd say, 15 yards out on the right-hand side. Basically, everyone from Ireland is in the box apart from McCabe and Larkin, who's staying a little bit further out. And she throws it into the box now, right towards the goalkeeper. A bit too close to the keeper, maybe. Cleared. Oh, cleared off the line! Oh, cleared off the line by Wales once again, and Ireland just weren't able to get that reaction. It's gone out for another long throw-in on the same side. Basically the exact same position that Campbell took it from before. Referee is chatting to Denise O'Sullivan and Katie McCabe. I don't know if they're complaining about something that happened in the box. Ref has gone to VAR. No, play on. Yeah. She's had her hand up to her earpiece there, which I was hoping was going to be a penalty call for us. Megan Campbell takes a long throw again, straight in towards the keeper. There's everyone in the box there. There's a tangle. Irish player on the ground, but the ref says play on, and Wales are looking to break now. Ireland have won the ball back with Izzy Atkinson in the centre of the field. Tried to play it out to McCabe, who's on the right wing. Seems to be actually running, hobbling a little bit. Looks like she may have hurt her groin.
Okay.
From what she's holding.
Right. We will go straight back over to you, Kathleen, should something develop there. I mean, the obvious question is why we haven't seen this weapon earlier in the two-legged affair. Megan Campbell just is, it's just ridiculous, Keith, what she can do, how dangerous those those throw-ins tend to be. I mean, even against top-tier nations in the Nations League, it was Ireland's best weapon. Now, to be fair, Ireland are probably thinking that they're a bit more than just that against a team of a similar standard.
Ah, they are, obviously, but, you know, it's always good to mix it up. I always think you should ask questions of defenders. You know, so often people will say, oh, they're so good, they're so cultured. Go and see if they put their head in where the hurts, where it matters. And I remember playing for Blackburn Rovers against Stoke once, and Tony Pulis was the manager of Stoke, and they obviously had the lap with the long throw. But we were training on a Friday, and I remember Sam Allardyce saying, if you're running towards your own goal line, don't kick it out for a throw-in, kick it out for the corner kick, because we were honestly that afraid of the throw-ins, because it was such a flat delivery in with the throw-in, it was so hard to deal with that we thought we've a better chance of actually defending a corner kick, so we'd actually kick
ball over
the
top
out.
Here, Leanne Kiernan has put it wide, a great opportunity for Ireland at this point on the breakaway, ball over the top. Kiernan's pace again. It was really dangerous on Friday night as well against the Welsh in Cardiff.
A lovely flick from Denise
O'Sullivan.
And it's
a lovely first touch. It's a great block. Great block from the Welsh defender coming in. Ireland corner. Katie McCabe takes it short to Kiernan. McCabe picks it back up on the edge of the box, puts it through, but looks like it's going to fall to Leanne Kiernan, who's just hit the roof of the net. Over the crossbar and roof of the net. It was actually Denise O'Sullivan. My apologies, not Leanne Kiernan. And two vital interventions from the Welsh defenders here, keeping Ireland at bay. But it's interesting what you say, like you talk about, you know, the throw-in versus the corner. That's going to be another corner for Ireland. It is literally Ireland's biggest threat at the moment. A Katie McCabe corner or a Megan Campbell throw, right?
Yeah, just whipping, putting balls into the box.
Or Megan Connolly, who's actually taking this with her right peg, it seems, launches it into the middle of the box. And once again, it looks like the Welsh are going to survive this particular attack.
Sorry, to be fair, we have said, like, for all Ireland now, we're, you know, ramping up the pressure, just hooking balls into the box. Katie McCabe just hooked one into the goalkeeper's hands. But sometimes when you're up in the pressure, you just hook balls into certain areas, into, you know, these question marks as the keeper comes, as the centre half comes, and all of a sudden the Welsh don't look as well drilled, they don't look as well organised, they don't look as sure as themselves, and it's no real great, you know, sexy play. It's just putting the ball into areas, and you do ask yourself, hindsight's a great thing, but you do ask yourself, where was this in the, you know, when we conceded the fourth goal, where was the real ramp up in pressure, where was the asking questions of the Welsh players? And look, it's probably a little bit too early to say. We still have another 3 minutes to go, so hopefully we'll get another chance.
Yeah, 95 minutes played at the Aviva Stadium. It is Ireland 1, Wales 2. Wales leading 3-2 on aggregate. As it stands, Wales are going to be heading to a first ever major tournament. Remember, neither of these teams have gone to a Euros before. Ireland looking to make it to back-to-back tournaments, and they're trying to play off in the back here at the moment. The clearance blocked by Welsh players, so it'll be a Courtney Brosnan goal kick here with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left to play. There might be a little bit of leeway beyond that if the referee is feeling a little bit generous. The Welsh fans looking pretty nervous. It pans to them in the crowd, the camera, as they're hopeful to hold on with their fingertips to this. So Courtney Brosnan has about to take the... I don't know, there's some sort of delay here. I think the Welsh are probably doing everything, Keith, to try and slow this game down.
Yeah, well, look, it is infuriating. As an Irishman, you look at it and you think it's absolutely infuriating. But as a player, as an ex-professional, you look at it and thinking it's exactly what I would be doing. And if we were in Cardiff and we had the lead, I'm sure we'd be slowing the game down. Game 100%. Management is one of these things. And the Welsh are just running in behind now. And this is obviously the worry for us. The more we expand ourselves, are we going to get the sucker punch in behind late doors? But look, we've been really competitive. I don't think you can say, look, Ireland aren't good enough to go to the Euros. It's been a really, really tight game, really fine margins. And I wouldn't even say the majority, just on the big ones, we've come out second best. And I think their bigger players have just now shown our bigger players. And that's why the Welsh have looked like they're going to get the win.
Yeah, so there is a minute and 15 seconds left. There is another throw-in to Ireland, about halfway into the Welsh half. It's on the right-hand side. And as you can imagine, Megan Campbell has the ball in her hand. She's going for the big long one here. This is just launches it right into the heart of the Welsh box there. And it's been headed out over the end line. And it looks, by the way, the reaction of the Irish players, that that's going to be a goal kick to Wales. Indeed it is. 50 seconds left on the clock. Wales are going to take 20 seconds over this goal kick. No question about that, to try and kill this. The camera pans to Eileen Gleeson. Five substitutions in the second half. Some people might argue that before the triple sub, she might have made a change a little bit earlier. But then again, it looked in the first half that they were every bit the measure of Wales. It was just as soon as Wales went in front, Keith, they just looked so much more likely to find a second as opposed to Ireland finding an equaliser.
They did, and look, I did think that if Ireland would have got the first goal, it would have really knocked the wind out of the Welsh sails. As it was the opposite way around. And look, it took us until they scored the second goal. There was a 10 minute period where the Welsh were really clever in what they were doing. They were slowing the game down, but all of a sudden we look really interested. We're trying to up the tempo, the ball goes out of play, we're keeping it up, we're trying to turn the screw. But the Welsh are doing everything that they should, in fairness to them, slowing it down, tying their laces, goalkeeper taking this thing out of it. It's been some really good performances from them, and there's the final whistle. So heartbreak.
The heartbreak indeed it is. Republic of Ireland 2, Wales 3. Wales qualified for the European Championships 2025 in Switzerland. Ireland failed to qualify yet again for a European Championship. Let's get over to Kathleen McNamee at the Aviva Stadium. Kathleen, what do you make of that?
So disappointing and devastating for this team. I'm just looking at Katie McCabe in front of me, who's just flat out on the ground, doesn't really want anyone around her at the moment. As Keith was saying there, like those last few minutes where they really went for it, you really saw a bit more of that sort of play that we'd seen from them in the first half. It's just, why could we not do that a little bit more? And like, this has been a consistent problem with this team, and like, there'll be plenty of time for postmortems and things over the next couple of days, but those goals either side of the first and second half, those are the ones that have consistently done this team, like the ones that they have found really difficult to deal with and really difficult to come back from. And you know, I think we have, when we were in Cardiff, when they scored early in the first half, it still felt like we had a lot of time, whereas when they scored at the start of the second half, it felt like we immediately went into panic mode and we were like, we only have 45 minutes to try and get through this. And look, incredibly disappointed for this group of players. It was an incredible experience getting to go to the World Cup last year, and some of these players we potentially won't see at a major tournament again, so that's a pretty big deal. But I suppose some hope for the future there. In, you see Jesse Stapleton coming up on my screen there looking quite upset, you know, players like her, Abby Larkin, Izzy Atkinson. There's still a lot to come from this group of players. It just wasn't to be for tonight.
There was also the opportunity to create an even greater legacy. Their legacy is secure after what happened and qualifying for a first ever major tournament, but every single one of these players, the manager in particular, would have wanted to go on to a greater level when the pressure is on to actually go and qualify for Euros after being at the World Cup. This was the opportunity, and look, we don't know if there will be another generation of player who will be at the same level as McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan, and let's hope that their peak goes on for another 2 years, 4 years. But this was certainly two of Ireland's greatest ever women's players at the peak of their powers. That much we do know.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't fault them for what they have done for Irish football. You know, they've put us on a global scene in the way that we haven't really had before with this women's team. You had it with the likes of Emma Byrne, but with the way that like women's football is now appreciated in the world, you never really had that celebrity star power, and that's exactly what we have with these players. And you know, the disappointing thing about this, and the thing that I hope doesn't happen over the next while, is that having them at a major tournament and having them on that global scene, it gave such eyes to women's football in Ireland. And that's the thing that, you know, it's going to have to be talked about over the coming weeks and months to make sure that we don't lose that. And the fact that all the momentum that has been built up since last year's World Cup doesn't go away, and that we're still bringing these players through the league, so that, you know, we're continuing to send young players over to England or to keep them here to make sure that that talent line does develop, because we can't leave it here. We can't let this be the defining legacy of this team being they didn't make two tournaments in a row. You know, they will always have Australia. No one can take that from them. But it's just where it comes next for this team is hard to say right now.
What makes a leader? It's a tough question, but this we know for sure. True leaders lead by example. They take risks and plunge into life with determination. And for real leaders, there's a symbol of high adrenaline and high achievement, the Range Rover Sport. The Range Rover Sport redefines sporting luxury with a dramatic modern design that meets a distinctive sporting character. And a well-appointed cabin brings a sense of occasion to every drive. The active noise cancellation feature filters out unwanted sound, making the cabin a cocoon-like sanctuary. Optional PM2.5 filtration reduces odors, bacteria, and allergens, while CO2 management enhances the wellness of everyone on board. Plus, you can curate the mood of every journey with configurable cabin lighting and bring a hint of refinement to every drive with optional 22-way adjustable, heated and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Build your Range Rover Sport at rangerover.com/us/sport. That's rangerover.com/us/sport.
I know that you're going to have to go and get audio there, and we will let you go after this, Kathleen. And it feels that we should just ask the question before we let you go about what happens next with Eileen Gleeson. Obviously, her contract is up at the end of this campaign. The campaign ends tonight. I mean, she has previously had a role in Irish football that wasn't managing this team. She's obviously now been manager of this team. What happens next with regards to her own role in Irish football?
I'll be perfectly honest and say the same thing that I've said the last couple of days. I don't know. When we were 2-0 down, I was thinking to myself, this probably doesn't bode well for her in that we've fallen to some of our old habits. That first half performance I thought was really good. Did some of the substitutions come a little bit too late? Potentially, but also we had been so strong against them in the first half and we had been getting opportunities. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think The way I leave it is that either way, is not qualifying for next summer a failure? Yes. Were we the better team for large parts? Yes, against Wales. But also we've seen massive growth in this team over the last couple of months. So it's whether the FAI decide that this is a project so that they can see going somewhere more and somewhere that they think is going to be productive, or whether they think there is the coaching staff out there to take this team to another level. But again, unfortunately, because we haven't qualified, they have a bit of time to think about it and actually think of what they want for the next generation of Irish football.
Kathleen, you may as well sit on the line until you have to leg it, because I know the players are out in the pitch and they might not actually be departing into the media room for quite some time. But just want to bring Ciara Grant into proceedings this evening. Ciara, how are you getting on?
Could be better.
Yeah.
Could be better.
What went wrong tonight?
I don't know. I felt really good going into the second half. I felt like we were in, the first 15 minutes were a bit, kind of hit or miss for both teams. It was all the bits, kind of, they were just kind of countering each other. Everybody was hitting long. There was no real rhythm. I didn't really know what style or what we were trying to aim for. And then we had a spell for about 50 minutes where we really got on the ball. There was a lot of gaps picking up. We were getting in behind the lines. We were creating some chances, some close chances. Katie's shot, Denise off the crossbar. And then conceding that penalty, I think, just really changed the game completely. And we didn't really get into it, honestly, until Patton's goal, and then we started looking like we were going to threaten. But before that, it was the final touch, the cross, everything just looked like it was just that, lacking that little bit of quality. You could tell the girls were working absolutely, like, their hearts out to try to make it work, but just things weren't falling for us. Do I think we were the better team? Yes. Do I think we should have potentially scored one or two in the first half? Yes. So at games like this, you just need to take your chances, and I just don't think we did today.
Did they give themselves the best opportunity to create those chances? Like, it felt certainly after Wales went 1-0 in front, they really asserted their dominance on proceedings. I know Ireland obviously got exposed a little bit with their high line thereafter. Mm-hmm. It just felt that it took them maybe 20-25 minutes in that second half to come to terms with the fact that they had to go and chase this game. When they had to chase it out of reflex, that's really when they got exposed by Wales.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I don't know if it was like them trying to stick to their game plan and knowing that they were going to score a few goals, but I think in a game like this, when it's quite even enough first half, I think they should have pushed on a little earlier. Like, once they conceded that goal, the next 10 minutes, I think they needed to start asserting their dominance and really show each other that they know that they believe they could have won that game. And look, Wales' second goal, she took it very well. Should Leanne have, I know it was a great tackle by Green for a shot, but these are the little things that just didn't fall our way today. I'm just devastated because, it's just a huge opportunity missed, and it's going to be an unusual 2 years now, because is it a new rebuild? Is a lot of players going to step away? I don't know, but I know the girls and staff are going to be hurting today.
She, Rusha Littlejohn, has been speaking to television. She's speaking as I'm speaking right now, and obviously she's not happy with the decision to award Wales a penalty. I don't know why you jump these days, she says. She says it's very, very hard to jump with your arms by your side. She's not happy with the decision. What did you make of that, Ciara?
I think, look, Patton's going for the header, and I think, I can't remember what player it was, gets a touch in front of her, slices off her head, and then hits Patton's arm. Okay, it's in an unusual position, but she's also going for a header in a pack, so you kind of have to have your arms up. Is she moving her arm to hit the ball? No. You can tell her head's down, her eyes, you can't even see where the ball is. It happened so fast. I think it's extremely harsh. Not one Wales player was looking for it. I don't think it really changed the flight of the ball that much. But this is it in VAR. When you slow it down and things sometimes look worse than they are. And I just think it's an extremely harsh decision.
Keith, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I would call it harsh, but I do think, you jump on your hands in that unnatural position, you're asking for trouble. We've seen it so often that players they're not trying to block the ball, they're just going in to try and head it, and all of a sudden it bounces off somebody else's and hits their hand and they've no reaction time. But the fallback, the referees, all we have is your arm shouldn't be up there. And I hate it when defenders come out and they have their arms behind their back, because you've no mobility if a winger starts manipulating the ball. So I hate when defenders do that, but I don't see how they can defend, with their arms up, because if it hits them in the arm, like we say, referees will just look at it and think, yeah, it's a penalty, it's in an unnatural position. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth, but we've seen it given so often that I'm not surprised by it whatsoever.
You can't jump hands by your side. If you're jumping that high in a pack, It's that's an unnatural position, almost having your hands by your side in that situation. But the rules of the game are now what they are, and they're scrutinised, they're argued week in, week out. And I think we're just on the wrong decision, on the wrong side today of the decision. I think it's extremely harsh.
There was obviously a number of moments in the final quarter of the match where Ireland had Wales under serious, serious pressure. A lot of those moments came from the throw-ins of Megan Campbell. Are there any questions about why she wasn't involved in this two-legged affair sooner than being 2-0 down?
I haven't been keeping too close an eye on Megan, but I know she wasn't getting much game time for London City, maybe coming on for the last 20 minutes, so maybe was that a factor in terms of fitness? In tonight, could she have come on earlier? Yes, I think when we realised we weren't creating many chances, it's such a threat. We know our aerial game is very good. We have some incredible headers of the ball. So potentially, she could have been brought on a little bit earlier. I thought the subs that came on provided a bit of energy. We did look like we were tiring before the subs came on. So maybe 5-10 more minutes earlier and we could have had created a few more chances. But again, this is all hindsight. I had full faith in the girls that started. I think it was a really strong team that started, but just wasn't our day today.
The age profile of this team is something that we touched on before kickoff, Kira. And if you think about the next major tournament, which is going to be the next World Cup, the opportunity for some of these players, you look through some of the ages of these players. Katie McCabe will be 31 when that World Cup rolls around. Denise O'Sullivan, 33. Courtney Brosnan, 31. Louise Quinn, 36. Julianne Russell, 35. Kira Cruz, 31. There's a core of players there that are going to be the wrong side of 30. Is there a danger that this team has now already seen its peak?
I don't think so. I think, this team's evolving. We've had some incredible players come in the last 2 years. Nowadays, female footballers are playing. Like, there's Jess Fishlock, and there's some women are playing to their mid-30s and playing at the top of their game. So, there's Fahi as well. Probably, I thought she had a great game today. Read the ball, you could see she was completely commanding, coordinating that back line. It really, really just depends. But, I do think we might lose a few players before that happens. But then it's up to the next generation within this team, really, because although our starting team is quite old, we still have quite a lot of youth in the squad. And we've been in the squad for a few years in and around it. So, their experience, even the harsh realities of losing today, will stand to them. But I do think in 4 years' time, the team that is here today might look very different.
Okay. Keith, in terms of how this team plays, did you see evidence of a team over the last 180 minutes of football that needs a little bit of a revamp in terms of its direction, in terms of how it takes on games? Because you can't really complain about who came out on top over the course of the two legs. Wales were just about better.
Yeah, probably just about better, but I think what leaves the sour taste in the mouth is when you look at it on paper, we probably are the better team. You know, obviously the Welsh will have their own view on that, but I think on paper we're probably just about the better team. But I'm not too sure. Look, I think it's a silly notion when people say that Ireland should play this brand of football, whatever it is, X, Y, or Z, you know, pragmatic, sexy football, whatever you want to do. I don't think Ireland is good enough to say this is what we're going to do and we're going to dominate from start to finish. I think Ireland has to take the opposition into account, and whatever the opposition's strengths, weaknesses are, you go and play on that. So I always think we have to take them into account. We set up according to the opposition. So look, do I think this team has gone backwards? I don't think so. I think we've come out the wrong side of some very, very tight results. Obviously, we're up in League A in the Nations League, which was a very, very tough group. Managed to beat France in there, although we didn't pick up a whole host of points. We battered Georgia in the last leg, but just come out the wrong side of the Welsh game. And we can look at the penalty. I don't think the reaction after the penalty was the best we've seen from the Ireland women. But after the second goal went in, you look at that and you think, if that was the reaction after the penalty and we put Wales under that pressure and we didn't allow that second goal, then maybe there's something to build on. But I just think in the real big moments of the game, we just come out second best. And I don't think we were dominated by any stretch of the imagination. You know, Wales will feel the better team won, but very, very competitive. And again, it is a cliche, but in the tight moments, Wales just come out slightly on top.
Kira, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, look, I think Keithy kind of summarised it quite well. You know, Ireland as a whole, we're a small population, we're a strong footballing country, but we do compete with a lot of other sports, Gaelic, rugby. I think the ratio of girls playing, you know, football to Gaelic is still on the side of the GAA. But I don't think it's hard because football's a tactical game. Teams change. Look at the Premier League. Yes, some teams assert their dominance every game, week in, week out. But look, there's Man City now crumbling because they don't know what to do, because people have figured out their game plan. So football's all about knowing your opposition, setting up the way, you know, either trusting your own game plan or, you know, changing it to who you're playing. And I think, you know, the Nations A served us well in getting better at playing against better teams. Sorry, that's my dog. But the Georgia game, yeah, maybe if we'd a semi-tougher game, not Georgia, if we played somebody in and around the Wales, we would have learned more about ourselves. But it's quite hard to come up against a Welsh team when we haven't played teams like that in a while. Did we learn a lot from Friday? Yes, but I do think our reaction after the first goal wasn't good enough, and I think we showed what we could do after the second one. And as Keith said, maybe if that had started immediately, we would have got that Patton goal a lot earlier, and then we would have been on the chase for maybe the 60th minute instead of the 85th minute.
Yeah, for sure. The dog isn't overly happy there with Ireland not going to Switzerland next year, which is, we are all your dog, I think it's fair to say. In Irish football, we need to get back to grassroots. I'm quoting here. Change our game, change our style, look at the best teams. They're all so comfortable on the football. They want the football. Everyone's got to get better on the football. That's Rusha Littlejohn on television right now, and I know emotions are going to be pretty high right after a crushing defeat like that, but pretty damning stuff, you'd have to say, that there is a deeper question here in terms of the football that is being produced, the footballer that is being produced within our own system here in Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think when you look at the home nations, you know, are we getting a little bit better? Yes. But then when we move on to Europe, are we getting better? Not necessarily. I know there's a lot of work going in. James Scott with the underage, you know, they've got a good plan in place, and you can come go see the girls, the interprovincials at under 15s, and you can see they're quite technical. They're playing with both feet. They're tactically aware. But that's still going to be another maybe 7-8 years before those players really start to come through. The Irish League this year we've seen is getting more competitive. You know, there was 4 or 5 teams competing for the top prize. We've got a lot more girls moving abroad. These things will help, but unfortunately they take time, and this is all changing, you know, off the back of the World Cup, but that was only 2 years ago, whereas other countries have been investing for years. A lot of these European girls go to elite schools. They've been training from a very young age. So then that means there's more girls training at that standard. Therefore, there's competition from a much younger age, instead of a lot of our pathways where we come up as maybe the best players in your youth team and you don't start facing competition until you step away from your youth club and go to, you know, your interprovincials or wherever you're moving on to next. And, you know, I can see why Rusha's frustrated,
But I do think the FAI have made a serious turn and they're starting to invest, but unfortunately we won't reap those rewards. And we have to remember, every other nation, every other country is also investing. So you're playing catch up with countries and teams that are also moving. So, you know, when you're already trying to catch up, you've got to move twice as fast and, you know, invest more heavily. And, you know, so I don't know. I think we still have a long way to go. But in terms of the home nations, I think we are up there. We're probably ahead of Wales and Scotland in terms of underage, if you look at our recent underage results. I know the Irish girls are beating Scotland and Wales well every year, I think from under 15s up to under 19s. But we need to see that translate to the senior team then.
Just one other point to put to you from what's been said tonight. Karen Duggan's been very strong on the pathways as well. She said the under-23s haven't come to fruition, the local-based sessions haven't come to fruition, and she points out that the two best players we've blooded since the World Cup are not blooded here. She's referring to Caitlin Hayes and Anna Patton, that there is a gap, which we've experienced for decades in the men's game, between the production lines in Ireland and the production lines in England. But there seems to be a growing chasm almost between what's going on in the UK, what's going on here, especially when you look at, say, the runaway trend that is the WSL, which is fantastic for so many reasons. But if Ireland aren't getting players hooked onto to that sort of gravy train, are we going to fall behind in terms of our development?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's not good enough that we don't have a 23s team. You know, there's girls on my team at Hibs here who've been away, I think, on four international camps over the last 12, 15 months with their 23s, playing teams like Denmark, Belgium, the Dutch as well. And, you know, they're great games. They're also, there's a huge jump from, you know, back when I was leaving, say, under 18s up to senior, it was quite an easy transition, whereas it's not now. So these girls need to be continue to play regular football, but also continue to grow and develop and play against good competition. So really it's improving the standards of the underage league so that the girls, once they leave under 19s, the transition is much easier and they can jump up. But we do need that 23s international level. There's a lot of girls in and around the periphery of the Irish teams that could really benefit, and especially girls under 19 internationals that leave and then might not see an international stage for the next 3-4 years. It also means the FAI can keep an eye on them, even if they're abroad, no matter where they are. They can get them in, teach them the philosophy or whatever the senior women's team is working on, so that these girls, if they get their chance to go into the senior women's team, are ready. Because with international football, you only get a short period of time with your players, and if girls are coming from very different backgrounds and not up to scratch, they might not make it, or they might not even be able to benefit the training, never mind get on the pitch. But I do think we're playing catch up, and, you know, we really do need to learn from the best. And is that some of the European teams? Is that the English structure? Yes, and unfortunately, all that does come with money, paid coaches, coach education, and, you know, from underage right down from under 8s, under 10s, under 12s, what are we teaching the kids? What are we focusing on? Is that ball skill initially, and then do we progress on to more tactical awareness? You know, that's way above my knowledge at the moment, but I do think, even now, I get jealous when I see some of the 17-year-olds coming up training with us, and I'm like, whoa, like their technical ability, knowledge is miles ahead of where I was at 16. And I know the Irish girls are getting there, but we still, there's so much more we need to do.
Yeah, I take Ciara's point. I think football's gone a little bit back to front at the minute, where people think, you know, tactics will win games of football and tactics over players. It's always players over tactics. Players win games of football, not tactics. If it's a Man City against another world heavyweight, then maybe the tactics would make the difference in that one. But generally, players are what dictate the tactics. You know, you can't have, you know, not to change the subject, but Ruben Amorim coming into Manchester United and saying the players will adapt to me and that's the way it's going to be. I think that's crazy. You can't just say, well, this is the way I play football, and, you know, if I haven't got the players, I'm just going to persist with it. That's not the way it is. You have to take into account what you have in the dressing room and what the strengths and weaknesses are. And even, you know, Ciara saying she's quite, you know, jealous of looking at 17-year-olds. It does my head in when I look at kids, the amount of tactical information they get, and you think at 17 you don't need that. I mean, I was in Blackburn's academy from 15 to the age of 21, and I think the biggest statistical information I got was me outputting running and how many crosses I put in, and that was basically it. And I think too much water can kill the plant, and if you give these kids every little statistic, you're bogging them down and stuff that really doesn't win games of football. What wins games of football is will, want, desire, talent. You start getting bogged down in tactics and all of this, I think it just gets all that little bit of a grey area for players, and you know it should be simplified. And when you get into the first team, the manager can put his own little, you know, tweaks and keep the ball play out from the back. I think 17-year-olds, 15-year-olds, if you're in your own third, make no mistakes, don't lose the ball playing behind teams. And you know, as I say, as you go up through the ladder, then you start putting little building blocks in place. Well, our first team manager wants this. I don't think, you know, as I say, getting 15, 17-year-olds to play out from the back is necessarily the best thing.
Yeah.
You are. And I think like, you can make that comparison then with fitness. So like the Irish women's national team, like when I played 2012, 2016, there was maybe 3-4 girls professionals. And then when I came back in 2020, there was maybe 3 of us not professionals. So I knew at that stage I had to go professional to maintain the fitness and kind of just even the athleticism of how the game had changed. But bear in mind, that's one facet of performance. If you had 4 women, 4 men, all different various skills and talent of football, and you got them all to the same fitness level, who's going to be the best footballer? The footballer with the most talent. You know, you can get people fit and strong that may help at certain levels, but when you're at the top level, you still need to be very good at football. So I think a lot of, like, you know, you talk about, yeah, a lot of stats, a lot of tactics, but we are also getting thrown lots of GPS data, lots of different things, to the extent that some players might think, oh, if I run 100 or 1,000 metres of high-speed running, I've had a good game. That's not true. Like, anybody can run 1,000 metres of high-speed running, but if you're not good enough, when somebody plays you a 70-yard ball to take it down and get a good cross in, then are you actually benefiting the team? So I do think what Rusha says, like, you first and foremost need to be good on the ball. All of those other things people can work on and people get better, but at the youth level, getting good ball control, getting comfortable with the ball, both feet, is so important. And that will just stay with you then throughout your whole career, and you can work on all those things and, you know, learn, as Keith said, maybe a little bit later in your career, more tactical stuff. But if you are good with the ball from a young age, you know, you see the kids, they stand out when you see that natural kind of talent that they have. Sorry.
In total agreement.
That dog is.
I think you're right. What Little John is saying about everybody needing to get on the ball and improve on it. If we need to improve on the ball, then why would we play them tactics about trying to get the ball into midfield, play on the half turn? And once or twice we did lose the ball in bad areas, but the Welsh didn't punish us. And I just think, why would you play those tactics if even the players are saying, well, we're not quite good on the ball just yet, but, you know, building blocks and we'll get into place. This was always going to be a really, really tight game, decided by fine margins. And, you know, it's not great, but when you're a professional footballer, you get told, make fewer mistakes than the opposition and you give yourself a chance to win the game. And popping the ball into midfield on a bumpy pitch that's played, a lot of rugby played on it, is probably not the best tactics on a wet night as well. It was difficult, always going to be difficult for the girls to play football.
Ciara, one last quick one before I let you go. Eileen Gleeson was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue on TV on her own contract. She says it's not something I'm going to talk about tonight. She wasn't overly happy to be asked about going back to head of girls and women's football. What do you think will happen with regards to Eileen Gleeson? Do you think she'll stay in this role? Do you think she'll go back to her previous role? Or do you think something else will happen?
I honestly don't know. You know, the FAI obviously made this big decision letting Vera go. So do they want even the publicity of a new manager after 2 years? You know, she had a good run in Nations B, but I do think any manager that was in, you know, we were going to win those games well anyway. You know, we got ourselves, as the Nations A progressed, way more organised, and, you know, ground out some great results near the end. So, you know, a good campaign for her, but realistically, we have not qualified now for Europe. So questions will be asked, and, you know, I honestly don't know what way it'll go. But I do think, you know, I don't know, like, why have we not got over the line? You know, we should have. We learned how to do it against Scotland. So, yeah, it's a hard one to take. And I'm sure once emotions have settled, we'll find out soon enough.
Ciara Grant, great stuff this evening. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Cheers. We'll take a quick break. We'll wrap up after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.